The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. You can find us on Twitter/X at Bastards_Boston. I am your host, Charlie Smith, coming to you from Los Angeles, California, by way of Providence, Rhode Island. You can find me on Twitter at Smith_MLB. Our other hosts for this episode are Jeremy Schilling, coming to us from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Massachusetts, and Terry Cushman, coming to us from Myrtle Beach in South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine. Jeremy, how are you doing? Where can the fans find you?
Terrible. At JTShill20 on Twitter. I'm frustrated. That might come through with my commentary.
That's all good. Terrible is not a part of the handle for those that were trying to pay attention there. It's just, you said JTShill20?
Yep.
Flawless. Terrence, how are you doing? Where can the fans find you?
I'm doing well. And I can be found at CushmanMLB. You can find us on Instagram. We've gotten busier on our Substack blog. Search Bastards of Boston Substack. We listed off our favorite trade candidate. We actually turned that into a podcast, which is the most recent episode before this. So check that out if you have time. And yeah, not the weekend I expected.
Not the weekend I expected either, and I had to pay for 33% of that lashing. So again, Bastards_Boston is where you can find us. The Red Sox obviously had a rough series coming out of the All-Star break, getting swept 3-0 and being outscored by the Los Angeles Dodgers 20-13, losing 4-1, 7-6 in 12 innings, and then 9-6 today. I admittedly did not even watch the ninth inning because I couldn't. It was that bad. Right now in the standings, 53-43, 10 games above 500. We are in third place in the AL East, 6.5 games behind the Orioles. We are fourth in the wild card standings. We're now 1 game behind the Royals. This used to be my favorite question to ask before we did Studs and Duds. But Jeremy, I know we were kind of flirting with the 7 to mid-7s. What is your temperature check right now on the Red Sox?
6.3. I was a 6.8 last recording. I'm now a 6.3. I predicted this. I had some commentary about all-star breaks being at the wrong time when you're hot, and the Dodgers were playing poorly, you know, and it kind of flipped the script here, except for a couple of players. And there's special reasons why we lost each of the 3 games we lost, so we'll get into that, but I'm a 6.3.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, I apologize. I thought we were in the mid-7s to low-7s the last time we had a chance to check, but you know, I thought we were gonna lose game one, and then we were gonna win game two and three. Terry thought we'd win game one, and then we'd lose game two, and then we were collectively going to win game three. But we were so confident in that third game that I found myself lost for words. After yesterday's performance, that was a gut-wrenching loss. There's no other words for it. And so with that being said, we're going to lead off with our duds. Jeremy, if you want to go first and hit us with your dud.
Yeah, so Bernardino set the tone for the whole series, in my opinion. We're going to talk about him later, but Pivetta's really, really good. Kelly gets you a good inning, then leaves some people on base, and Bernardino doesn't record an out. Two hits, three runs, all earned, and a walk. And his ERA ballooned to 2.53. A guy who's been living below a one whip is now a 1.28. He's been really bad. He was bad in the game I went to in Miami. For a guy who had started to create a reputation for himself for coming through in the big moments, you almost felt like it was unfair where he was always brought in with men on base and not given a clean inning. But then he'd time and time again found a way to get out of those slippery spots, and he's not doing it anymore. And the ball to Freeman that was hit, was it Freeman? It was Freeman, I believe.
The grand slam was absolutely Freeman. Yeah, I was there. That
ball was, if it wasn't middle, it was slightly down and slightly in, and just not a good spot for that leveraged pitch. So, I mean, he didn't have it. I thought he was one of the guys that would benefit from the break, and he comes out in his first outing and is non-competitive. Sets the tone for the whole series. Pissed me off from Jump Street.
Terry.
Yeah, you know, I'd been kind of watching Bernardino the last few weeks, and he just doesn't really look as sharp as he did, you know, the first 10 or 12 weeks of the season. And, you know, the opposing batters are making lots of contact. He hasn't, I guess his walks haven't really been a problem in his last five appearances. The only walk issued was in this game. That was, and I think that was an intentional walk to their catcher there, Will Smith. And it's kind of curious to me why they even walked Will Smith, because there was only one out. So you're going to, I know Freeman's a lefty and he was 0 for 3, so perhaps that was just the preferred thing, but I don't like walking the bases loaded, you know, with one out. Anyway, and then Freeman just absolutely, it was a line drive home run. Like, there wasn't a lot of, you know, there wasn't really a lot of launch to it, and it just barely cleared that right field wall. You know, just it was a piss missile, you know, for lack of a better term. But
so, oh, sorry, let me let you go.
Well, I was just gonna say, you know, a lot of people back when the trade Kenley talk was pretty prominent, you know, a month or so ago, Bernardino was a popular name to potentially close out some of these games. I liked and still do like Zach Kelly. He wasn't super sharp this series, but I don't like Bernardino in that spot at all. And I really don't know what to expect of him going forward. Hopefully he just rights the ship and goes back to at least being tough against lefties, but hasn't been stellar here in the last few weeks.
So a couple things to break down, and I apologize for cutting you off, Terrence. There's going to be a whole lot of sorries, and the Red Sox should be very sorry here. He's had a rough month. Two of his last three starts have been, or last appearances, excuse me, have been pretty bad. Brandon Bernardino was brought in specifically to face, you know, Freddie Freeman in that situation because of the fact that he is a lefty specialist. Career lefties are hitting just over, or they were hitting under 200 against him. Righties are hitting close to 300. He had never given up a home run to a left-handed hitter before Freddie Freeman's home run. So it was the perfect storm. If we're going to talk about statistics and the odds, it was just really, really unlucky. This is somebody who gave up two runs to the Yankees earlier this month. The three runs were, you know, obviously his that he had given up in the, you know, the grand slam here. His ERA is over 22. In the first 2 months of baseball, or even the last 3 months, the whole season, he'd given up four earned runs. That's it. The guy had been on point. And so it's really, really unfortunate that happened. But Jeremy's right. That pitch was low you know, watching the replay on the huge screen at Dodger Stadium, you know, I, Dodgers fans like going, oh, that sucked. Like, oh, well, that's great. Ha ha, Boston. And Terry and I had a laugh about it saying, you know, you should have turned around and said, hey, thank you for 2018. I just wasn't quick enough on the drop for that. But it was demoralizing. You're up 1-0. You absolutely, you know, wasted an incredible performance. And honestly, Bernardino just had a really, really bad game against the lefty that just did it. He did his job. Freddie Freeman has not been hitting for pop as of late. And, or excuse me, as of late, he has been. But before that, really was not. Had another home run today. Like, Freddie Freeman has been on another level. He's one of the best players in baseball. There's a reason why some people picked him to be the MVP. And Bernardino just got overmatched in that game. And we just could not come back in game one. Anything else that either one of you want to add? Yeah, Terry, go ahead.
Yeah, so more perspective here on, you know, why he just seems to be trending the wrong way. If you go back to his, let's see, his June 23rd appearance, that was against the Cincinnati Reds. He's only pitched three full innings since then, and none of them have been a full inning at a time. He's either come in with two outs to get, you know, to get the last out if it happened to be a lefty or whatever in the inning. But three full innings since June 23rd, and he's given up nine hits in those three full, if you add them all up. So he's getting hit around, and a lot of those appearances are multi-hits. Three out of his five appearances so far in July, he's had two hits in three of those five. So it just seems like they're starting to figure him out a little bit more, and he's not winning the chess match, and I don't know if they need to use him a little bit more strategically, you know, than they had been. But you look at the bullpen right now, Weissert is absolute garbage. A 6-something ERA since mid-May. That's 2 months now. Slayton, I probably should have checked for an update on him. He wasn't expected to be out long, but there is inflammation in his elbow, so who really knows? Chris Martin, based on the rhetoric there, he might not be back at all this year. And he just got shut down again last week. And then, so who do you have? I mean, Zach Kelly still pitching okay. Kenley, unless we really, really, really have a bad week here, he's not going anywhere. We're 8 above .500, by the way. I would have mentioned that in the temperature check, but so we've got what, 8 games left before the deadline, something like that, 7 or 8. So if we have a tough week, and the next 3 games are against Colorado, so that shouldn't be you know, ugly, and the pitching matchups are pretty favorable. But anyway, so the bullpen is suddenly looking very vulnerable. And Bernardino is a big part of that, of all the guys that are still healthy.
Yeah, I apologize. Thank you for calling me out on that. I meant to say 53 and 45. I mistyped that from the, you know, preliminary thing. I went 44 down to 43. That's my fault. But yeah, 8 games over. Tough one. That was just really, really tough. Yeah. Why wouldn't you, Terry, lead us with our next dud?
My dud for the series is going to be Willy Abreu. He was 1-for-9. He was especially painful here in the finale. He hit into a double play that was in the 7th or 8th inning. We had a potential rally going. I don't think Kenley hadn't given up that home run yet, I don't think. So it was a closer game at the time, and so that was a bit painful. And then in the 9th inning, you know, he essentially killed it altogether. You know, we had 2 on, I think, runners on 1st and 3rd. We had already put up 3 runs in that inning, and game-ending pop fly. So Not a great outing for him. Not a great series, rather. Three strikeouts in game one. The strikeouts have definitely been a problem over the last 4 or 5 weeks. He did kind of heat up in the earlier part of the month, but seems to be trending the wrong way again. And we're going to be doing tons of trade talks. There could be some emergency episodes in the coming days if anything does materialize in regards to a trade. And I'm starting to hate the idea of trading him less and less as we go. But I would be willing to, if not him, I would definitely put Roman Anthony in a deal, just because we got so many lefty outfielders. But regardless, not a good series for Abreu.
No, and one other thing to add, on the ESPN game today, they were talking about how outside of Kenley Jansen, they only have a bunch of young kids that are, you know, they're young. There's like little to no experience because all the tenured vets are either injured or not that good. Jeremy, anything you want to add about Abreu?
Yeah, there were two guys during this series that I thought just looked lost. Devers, who I don't worry about, but his timing's off. He's swinging and missing a lot right now. This isn't about him. It's about Abreu. If I have to see Abreu foul back a middle pitch again, I'm going to lose my mind. Like, how are he's getting good pitches to hit. He's just not putting him in play. And I don't know, in the ninth on the ball that was middle, that he fouled straight back if he was trying to tie the game, because if that's his mindset going into that at bat, then I'm even more upset than I am right now, just generally speaking with the whole team, including Abreu. He's got to go back to a more basic approach, which generally speaking, when you're slumping, is up the middle in the opposite way. It's not good. I don't think he drew a walk in this series. He struck out three times on Friday. Again, he struck out tonight. So 4 Ks in 9 at-bats. I mean, he's totally lost again, like he was 2 weeks ago. So I have concerns about him hitting in the middle of the lineup and being an automatic out.
It's not been fun. Abreu has absolutely struggled. I don't think any pitcher that faces him is concerned. You know, outside of that Oakland series, he's been borderline irrelevant. You know, a couple of extra base hits, sure. But outside of that Oakland series where he went 4 for 7, 2 homers, 6 RBIs, just one lone RBI in the month. And that's not sustainable. You know, we've seen the numbers slowly start to, you know, come down. I don't know, man. I don't think that this is anywhere close to what we thought was going to happen with Abreu, because he seemed to do great the first month of the season, you know, hitting way over, you know, 330 and was figuring it out, was doing a great job. And then a little bit of a concern in May, still some pop. The strikeout numbers did come up quite a bit. And then, you know, June obviously didn't play all that much. And this month has just gone from bad to worse. So I don't know. He's striking out at almost, you know, half of his at-bats. You know, he's not scaring anybody, and he's just not getting the job done. And I just don't know. I don't know what happened. It's so crazy how far he's fallen from grace. You know, I don't know. It's another bad series for him. We can only keep making excuses for him for so long. I mean, it started with the Yankees series earlier this year. He was hitless. He didn't do anything, and he struck out in almost every single at bat. You know, 0 for 8, 6 strikeouts. That's concerning. So the problems happened several weeks ago, and it hasn't been corrected. So until that happens, I don't want to see him in the lineup. I pinch hit duties, if that. Otherwise, no thank you. Anything else you gents want? Yeah, go ahead, T.
Yeah, so just in the last month, he's hitting .234 with a .270, and he's got about a 9-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio. So just not very good plate appearances.
It's like a borderline. You know, he's striking out a third of the time. It's not as bad as another player on our team that's striking out a fair clip, but at least we can count on some extra base hits from that guy. And we're just, we're not getting it. This is going to be someone who's going to be hitting close to 220 by the season's end with maybe 10 homers and 40 RBIs at this rate. It's awful. Jeremy, do you want to add anything else? Yeah.
Three quick side notes. On Saturday, he was charged with an error. So that compounds the problems at the plate. I chalk it up to your point, Charlie. I chalk it up to a young player developing at the big league level, which is what he's doing. And thirdly, it's just happening at the absolute wrong time. Because if you're planning to package him in a deal to add a right-handed bat or a left-handed pitcher, his value is taking a little bit of a hit here. So, you know, that's – there's a lot going on here. And unfortunately for the team, as far as making a decision in using him or being able to use him to acquire a significant asset, I think that's taken – probably the biggest issue that I have.
Yeah, absolutely. That's going to round it out with my dud here. And my dud here, I can't believe I'm saying this because of what I said on the last episode I had with just Terry. It was just a two-man show that day. Cutter Crawford, 5 innings, 6 runs on 7 hits, all earned, no walks, a pair of strikeouts, and averaged 1 home run per inning. Remarkable, you know, only 1 home run allowed in his last 3 games. To say he was due, okay, sure, fair. But this is someone who had allowed 5 home runs from March 30th through the end of May. He had allowed 5 home runs, and those were all in the month of May. He didn't allow a home run in April, didn't allow a home run in March, granted, just one appearance. But still, woof. I mean, I really would like to chalk this up to a clunker performance, but this was bad. This was really, really bad. And some of those home runs were not cheapies either. You know, players that don't hit home runs off of him were hitting rockets, you know. Lux does not hit home runs, 380 feet. Otani, 473 feet. Second longest home run in the Statcast era. And granted, it's Otani. Freddie Freeman went yard again. The concern is that Barnes hit a home run, their catcher, who doesn't do anything ever. And you know, Lux, again, Lux, who doesn't do anything. Lux is not a power hitter and was having a lot of extra base success, had a double, had a home run, had 3 hits today. So, and stole a base, like everything that could have gone wrong did. And it's unfortunate that it happened to Cutter Crawford because Terry and I literally said on the air, I said, if you pick the Dodgers, you're an idiot. I said that. And anybody who bet against the, you know, the Red Sox in game 1, congratulations, you made a decent amount of money. And Paxton, who looked absolute washed in the first inning, slowly started ticking up on the strike or on the strikes and the fastball, which went from mid upper 80s to 97 miles an hour, which made no sense. We weren't seeing that kind of success and consistency from Paxton last year. Paxton just won his 8th game on the season. Excuse me. It would have been really nice to see that in Boston last year. You know, I mean, maybe it was like a revenge game, you know, want to throw it to the team that, you know, you used to play for. But, dude, perhaps you forgot you got paid by this team and you didn't throw a pitch in 2022. So just a frustrating game, really unlucky. And Jeremy, to your point, I feel like it's the perfect storm of, you know, we've been overperforming this season. We're playing way out of our minds. Everything that could have gone wrong did in this series. And Cutter Crawford along with 5 home runs is just another chapter of that book in the series. Terry, why don't you go first, and then we'll bring home Jeremy.
I stopped short of calling it an automatic win for the Red Sox because whenever I do that, we lose. But it felt like it was going to be one. Paxton was coming off a bad start where he walked at least 4 batters and got slapped around a little bit. And then in the first inning, you know, he gives up two runs with a homer right away. Paxton does. So I'm thinking, okay, this is what we thought. This is exactly how we scripted it. And we'll put up a couple of runs here, probably score a few more before he exits the game, and Crawford should be able to cruise through this lineup. And all you're really afraid of here is Will Smith, Teoscar Hernandez, and Shohei Ohtani. And, you know, if you can navigate that part of the order, you should be fine as far as the rest of it. Mookie's out, and they're not that offensive juggernaut. They don't have Max Muncy either. But they just really, I don't know if they saw something with Crawford, you know, in preparing for the game, and they just knew how to, you know, hit the ball hard. And because that's what, 5 home runs, right? That's the most he's ever given up. I don't know if any pitcher, most pitchers in their career don't give up 5 in one game. So this probably will be the worst game of his career from that standpoint. But he's been hot, and as bad as that was, it doesn't take away from what's been a good season. I mean, he's 6-8, not a ton of run support. 3.37 ERA on the season. Far and away better than I thought he would be.
Yeah, 5 is a career high. He never even allowed 4. Jeremy, go ahead.
This is why I hate the win stat. Paxton has 9 wins, as you stated, Charlie, but he's getting the most run support in baseball. Crawford has been exponentially better, yet his wins are almost half because he doesn't get run support, despite how well he's pitched for large chunks of the season. I don't worry about Crawford. I think he's going to be fine. I think he just sucked today. Too many pitches in the middle against a team that's got a lot of talent, and Ohtani, Freeman, guys that hit home runs are guys you'd expect to be on this list. And when you miss as poorly as he missed, guys that don't hit home runs hit home runs. It seemed like a really warm day in LA, 4 o'clock start time. The ball's going to travel. Just didn't pitch well. You know, he'd been pitching well coming into this start. You know, maybe he was affected by the extra day's rest, but I'm not worried about him. He's going to pitch again against the Yankees, and I like him in that series. He's been really good against the Yankees, including that Sunday Night Baseball win on ESPN a couple of weeks ago. The thing that I have a problem with is that this was not Hauk. And the reason why it wasn't is because he pitched in the All-Star game. It's frustrating that this wasn't Hauk's start. He's got to be your stopper. We lose the first 2 games. Just a little bit frustrating that our best 3 didn't go in this series. I have no problem with Pivetta. I have no problem with Crawford. I would have liked to see Hauk in this series. So
one thing about the weather here in Los Angeles, it has been very hot here lately. It was low 90s, 92 to 94 degrees today. And in dry heat in Los Angeles, I was just talking about this with my, you know, soon-to-be father-in-law. He shared that at Dodger Stadium, when it's warm like that, balls fly out very quickly and quite regularly. So after the first inning, when Jaren Duran had another home run, we saw Freddie Freeman hit a home run the first inning. Teoscar followed up just a couple innings later. He goes, today could be a day where you're going to see a lot. It's hot, and I don't think pitches are getting grooved, but, you know, all the hitters are doing their damage and doing their work in their sweet spot in a stadium with the temperature. It felt like you were playing in Colorado because balls were flying out of there. You know, again, Duran had a home run. Freeman had a home run. Teoscar Hernandez had a home run. Lux had a home run. Barnes had a home run. Ohtani hit a mammoth shot. And then Hayward hit the home run in the 8th inning. That's when I turned the game off. And we scored 3 more runs in the 9th inning, which Terry informed me. That was great. But I mean, it was just, it's hard to watch. It felt like home run derby again. I watched home run derby. I didn't need to see another one. Terry, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, just real quick. That home run from Ohtani, 473 feet, as you mentioned. And whenever, you know, any home run, whether it's Fenway or somewhere else, whenever it has a ton of distance, I'm guessing that's got to be either the furthest home run of the season or the second or third furthest. But when you talk about that kind of distance, I automatically think about the red seat. And there's a lot of debate over that, whether it's legitimate or not, or if it's a myth. And I pointed out tonight how that, I don't even know what it's called at Fenway, but that big, you know, building essentially that they put onto the upper deck there where all the offices are, where the broadcast booths are, that wasn't there prior to the 1990s. Neither was most of that upper deck. There was just a thin row of seats going across that upper deck previously. And just with a tailwind, I think that ball would have reached the red seat. And Shohei Ohtani's home run tonight, which wouldn't have been favorable conditions, but in terms of a tailwind, because those grandstands are massive at Dodger Stadium, and he still went just 29 feet short of the Ted Williams ball at Fenway. So just an absolute blast. And I just, nobody even knew where that ball landed. And Clayton Kershaw was mic'd up in the dugout. He's getting ready to finally come back here in the next couple of weeks. He's played at Dodger Stadium his entire career, which is well over a decade now. He's never seen a ball hit that far. So that was insane. And it sucks to be Crawford to be the one to give that up. But that was hit a ton. That's over a football field and a half.
It was a mammoth shot. I mean, they slowed down. They got a camera to actually get the flyover or kind of fly by that shot. It took forever to leave. It went above a pink, I think it was like a pinkish orange sign. It was weird glare. And it went underneath the awning in deep right field. And to your point, absolutely. 473 feet is insane. That is an insane distance. That's, you know, 70 feet, almost 60 feet more than the next home run. That's six stories. That was a mammoth shot. And again, to your point, it sucks that it was against him, but that was the, you know, the last one. I think, you know, again, the perfect combination of Crawford not having a great day, it being really hot at Dodger Stadium and the air just being really dry, it made for a disaster. And it's just really unfortunate. Anything else? Yeah, Terry.
Yeah, so just pulling it up now, that distance actually ties Mike Trout this year, who hit a 473-feet shot at Lone Depot Park. Where is that? Who plays there?
Lone Depot is Miami.
Oh, that's Miami? Okay. That's why I didn't know.
Went there.
All right.
Yeah.
And then just next on that list is Vladimir Guerrero Jr., 450 feet at Tropicana Field. Third on that list, Luis Robert Jr., 449 feet, just one less from Vladimir. He hit that one at home in Chicago. Brandon Lau, 444 feet at Tropicana. So that's a bit of a home run park this year. And then fifth on that list, Fernando Tatis Jr., 441 feet at home at Petco Park. Ironically, this is interesting. Wow, this is really interesting. I wonder if this article is... they would have updated it. Those were all within the first week of the season, so... you know, just take that for what it is. But... Shohei tied it tonight.
Yeah, absolute beam shot. A couple other dishonorable mentions. I know Jeremy, disagreed with one of my dishonorables last week, so I don't think we're going to disagree on this one. Dom Smith, 2 for 10, couple doubles, pair of strikeouts, 200 batting average, not great. Kenley Jensen, this one's a heartbreaker. 2 innings, 5 hits, blew a save in game 2 to former teammate Kike Hernandez. 4 earned runs, a walk, a pair of strikeouts, just didn't have it. Greg Weissert, again, awful. 3 runs, only 1 earned in an inning and a third. Pair of strikeouts, pair of walks. I mean, this was just a really, really bad series. I mean, all in all, there are very few bright spots, but we will talk about that shortly in studs right after Terry gives us the final bit.
Yeah, and unless I missed you reading it off, first two home runs of the season, Kenley has given up. So.
Correct.
Yeah.
Something that I also touted quite a bit, talking about how he's the best closer in baseball.
Did you mention Devers too?
Did not mention Devers either.
Stunk. 1 for 12.
Fire. Devers also did 4. Yeah. He had a sombrero today too.
Yeah.
Two of the strikeouts today were brutal.
5 strikeouts. Paxton's a lefty, so that's probably part of the reason he had a bad game. And to Paxton's credit, as much as I crapped on him, he did really buckle in after that first inning and was pretty sharp. Most of the Red Sox lineup outside of one guy we're going to talk about was really off balance throughout much of that start by Paxton.
I was really unfortunate. I'm just really happy this series is over. That'll bring us to our studs. So, Jeremy, why don't you lead us off with your happy moment of the series?
Yeah, so Duran coming off the All-Star game where he was kind of introduced to people outside of Boston did not disappoint. 6 for 12, 7 RBIs, 2 home runs. I don't think I'm understating this, but he's becoming one of the best baseball players in baseball. I mean, he is awesome. And one thing, I already liked him, and I liked how he responded to the T-shirt thing with Major League Baseball. And I also got the feeling, because Cora speaks about him differently than he speaks about a lot of the other players, that guy is likable as hell, man. The way he handled the sudden spotlight on the national stage was really commendable, and it seemed really, truly genuine. So I went from liking the player to loving the player, just on a personal level, because you want to root for good guys, guys that work hard. And I don't think he's like one of these guys that's saying things. Like Brady was a guy who like said them. It was like he's saying the right things, but is that who he is? Like, this is who I think Duran is. And so you'd think his head would swell. You'd think he'd feel himself a little bit, and he'd have the humbling experience coming off of that to level him off. But he must not have, because he comes into this series in LA, spotlight, tonight's on ESPN. The guy was the best player in the series. I don't care about Shohei's one swing, because the Red Sox handled him for the most part. Pivetta struck him out 3 times. Duran was the best player in this series. So, I'm really looking forward to see what he does the rest of the year, because I really think he's ascending to be one of those top guys.
Terry.
I'll just take it a massive step further. Jaron Duran is the best player on the Red Sox in 2024.
Agreed.
Yeah, I mean, Devers, strikes a lot of fear in guys when he comes up to the plate, especially from a power standpoint. But I just feel like Duran is a little bit more likely to put the ball in play every time. And we're starting to see the power stroke come in, as we've seen over the last 3 or 4 weeks. But you just always feel like he's going to do something. And he had that 2-run triple. I mean, where is he at with triples now? I got it right here, actually. 10 on the season. Yeah, leads Major League Baseball. And I was looking at his WAR, by the way, and surprisingly, as I pulled it up, Gunnar Henderson has passed Aaron Judge just slightly, 6.6 to 6.5. But at last check, Duran was a 5.1 WAR. That's now 5.3. That ties him with Juan Soto. So imagine that. You're tied with one of the greatest hitters of our generation. And Juan Soto, I mean, he's only 26 years old, I think, 25, 26. He's been in the majors since 2018. He won a ring in 2019 with the Washington Nationals. So this is a guy who's very tenured, and Duran is right there with him. looking at defensive war here, nobody above Jaren Duran, and that's Juan Soto, Shohei Ohtani, Bobby Witt Jr., Aaron Judge, Gunnar Henderson. None of those guys have a higher defensive war than him. So it's just, he's just out of his mind. And when the season began, you know, I mentioned hopefully he can build off of that breakout year from 2023. And I said, if he just simply matched it, that would be phenomenal. But he's blown it out of the water. And the guy that you're next kind of looking to compare him with is Jacoby Ellsbury. I mean, they profile very similarly. They both steal a ton of bags, both good contact hitters. Ellsbury, for much of his career, was a very high on-base guy. Duran's on base right now is right around 350 or so, maybe 355. And Ellsbury's highest season in terms of war was 2011. Many people thought he should have been the MVP that year. They gave it to Verlander. So one of those rare seasons where the Cy Young recipient also wins the MVP. But Ellsbury had an 8.3 war because he was just out of his mind. He hit 33 home runs out of nowhere. Say what you want. I'm not gonna say it. But
roids.
There it is. And so Ellsbury's second best season is basically on par with what Duran is doing right now. So love to see it. And I'm probably a week or two away from getting a Duran jersey. He's the next one on the shopping list.
I really was curious to know if you were going to be bringing that up on the show because, you know, Jaren Duran, you already took the words out of my mouth. He really is the best player on this team. He had a multiple hit game in each game of this series. That means he's had a multi-hit game in five straight games. Two in Kansas City, three against the Dodgers, had a towering home run, won the MVP for the All-Star game. Jeremy, you again took the words out of my mouth. I mean, he shows up, he's got swagger, he's fun. He kind of reminds me of Tristan Casas. Like, if you put a microphone in front of him, you do want to listen to what he says. He's going to be funny. He's going to be cool. I can't say anything bad about him. And he's a threat in any capacity. He now has the power thing working for him. He's got the wheels. The defense is there. I mean, God, he's just – he's the guy. Jeremy, go ahead.
I object – to your Duran Casas comparison by personality. Duran is talking about working hard, gives a lot of credit to his father and his family, talks about his mindset moving forward. And the other thing I really like, and I don't expect this from anybody, but he is completely honest with you with his mental health. So, and the struggles he went through to get where he is right now. Casas to me is a shtick. And I don't like it. So that's probably an unpopular opinion, but I'm going to stick to it. I think the sunbathing and the dry swings and the mental at-bats and all this nonsense that he talks about it's fake. It's completely fake. All Duran talks about is working hard and why he has that mindset, which he cites back to his father. You know, he comes out when he gets the letter from baseball, and he could easily have not made any comment. He could have easily said, screw it, I'm doing what I want to do. But he says, no, the t-shirt, which I can't say on the air, has a specific meaning, and he explained it, and it was believable and honest. So I get why people like Casas. I'm not one of them. I like the player. I like what he brings to the field. I think his personality is kind of, frankly, annoying.
Just to add on that, that's not going to be a popular opinion, but I agree with it. So if I'm agreeing with it,
jump on that bandwagon.
You know it's not going to be popular. I was thinking about this just this weekend, though. There's two things annoying about Casas. Number one, he's got an injury problem. And number two, what you were essentially talking about here, Jeremy, is he lacks maturity. He is very immature.
Well said.
And yep. And you know, you can say what you want about the fingernails, but there's a lot of "Hey, look at me" that comes from Tristan Casas, and it's just dumb. And he essentially lied with the dry swings, and when he gets called out on it, he goes, no, I do those swings in my head. Come on, man. You know? So for as long as he's...
What can you possibly get from that? I mean, I remember playing baseball. I'll take a dry swing right now. Like, am I going to be able to step in the box and rip a ball up the middle at 92 with movement? No, because baseball is a timing sport. There's a reason why you literally take hundreds of swings a day, whether it be off a tee, soft toss, BP, live BP, in-game at-bats. Like, it's completely ridiculous. And by the way, anybody who's waiting for Casas to come back, be healthy, and be put in the lineup is out of their mind, because he's going to go have to get 20 at-bats in the minor leagues. And then when he comes back, there is absolutely no guarantee that he's going to be in a rhythm to hit big league pitching down the stretch. So I'm counting on that less and less, because there's still no date for him to go in even rehab.
I would honestly...
We're going off topic, but that's Charlie's fault, because he compared Durant's personality to Cass's personality.
It's fine.
I didn't say the personality. I said put a microphone in front of him. So if you're going to quote me, make sure we do it right. That's all I said, was put a microphone in front of him. I will defend myself because no one else will defend me, especially Tarrant. No, I'm kidding. Is there anything else we want to talk about him? Because I know we've got a couple other studs here we want to talk about.
I would just say this. Shut Casas down for the year. Don't mess with it. And I'll throw this out there. The next manager of the Red Sox is going to be interesting in how he relates to Casas and what he's willing to tolerate. This is a young clubhouse, but when Casas first got called up, apparently Matt Barnes and JD Martinez were both really annoyed by Casas and apparently made some snide remarks. And so he's getting away with it right now because it is a young clubhouse, and Devers should be the team captain. It's not really his type of personality to go straighten out Tristan Casas. So it's a very young team, and I think the more animated he's going to get. But if he comes back next year and goes off, I'll probably back off, but
well, the biggest thing I'd have to say about that, Terry, is if you hit and produce, you get away with whatever it is you're doing. It's when you're not available, or when you are available, you're not productive, that those things get magnified and create a problem, especially in the clubhouse. So anyways, I'll leave it at that.
Yep. Terry, why don't you hit us with your stud in the series?
My stud, I've long been off that page, but my stud for the series is Nick Pivetta, who had probably one of his better starts in the last few months. His line was six innings pitched, only two hits, no earned runs, walked just one, struck out eight, basically cruised through the whole outing there. I'm pulling it up right now. So first inning, I mean, Will Smith gets a single. He's the only base runner that reaches. That was one of the two hits. Second inning, three up, three down for Pivetta. Third inning, he walks Vargas right away. Then the next three go down in order. It was just a really dominant start. Teoscar Hernandez, who had a great series, by the way, hit a double off him in the fourth inning, and that was the last guy to reach base. So, good start for Pivetta. If we were going to be sellers, suddenly, you know, he gets a little bit more compelling, but he's had a rough stretch, and if history lines up, it pretty much suggests he could have a nice five or six game run here, because that's been the trajectory of his career. So we need to kind of string together some wins, and you know, position ourselves to make some acquisitions here as we approach the deadline. And Nick Pivetta could be one of those guys that helps, you know, pave the way. He's got at least one more start before then.
Jeremy.
So I was going to bring this up in the dud section when we're talking about the bullpen and some things that went into this game, Bernardino specifically. But I'm going to bring it up now. I don't think Cora handled the pitching well at all on Friday night. Again, Pivetta's on an extended break. Why not bring him out for the seventh? He was totally dominant. Totally dominant. I don't think he allowed a runner in like eight straight plate appearances. He's only at 90 pitches, and I'm not necessarily saying he's going to get through the seventh, but give him 15 pitches and see if he can. Right? Then Kelly pitches the one inning, and now it's to Jansen, and it's a totally different ball game. So, but let's go back to the way it happened. Pivetta pitches. He gets taken out 90 pitches, totally disagree. Was kind of surprised by it, frankly. I would have given Bernardino a clean eighth. Kelly got us through the seventh. He did his job. If you're going to bring Bernardino into the game, give him a clean inning. You're trying to squeeze too many outs out of that spot for Kelly. And it just completely blows up. And obviously Bernardino has not been good, so I don't know that giving him a clean inning makes a difference. I would think it might. But he inherits base runners, and it goes to hell in a handbasket. Pivetta was great, and he was good enough to go in. There was no signs that he could not go and get two or three outs in the seventh inning. So that's my only gripe. He's pitched great. I'll say it again. I say it every time we talk about him. I love his compete level, and I'm excited every time he gets the ball because you know he's going to give you a chance. He's going to go give his best effort and give you a chance.
Terry.
Well, just to add on to one of the things Jeremy was talking about. So if you give him the seventh, you can probably just go Kelly in the eighth, Jansen in the ninth, and you probably win a 1-0 game without Bernardino. I trust Kelly right now more than I do Bernardino. And Kelly, not super great in the series. He had two walks in game one, but... But that would have been your best path to winning. Perhaps Cora felt, you know, we were pretty well rested coming off the break here, and we were pretty well rested going into it, quite frankly. I mean, the last, I think, four straight games, you only used three pitchers the whole game. So not a great series for him either, but is what it is, and Pivetta did his job regardless.
So before I talk about that, I just got a notification that it appears that Kenley Jensen will not be with the Red Sox for the Colorado series because of something to do with his heart.
Oh.
So we no longer have a closer for the series. So that's a little bit scary there. It just says that he will not travel to the Colorado series due to the heart condition. And as someone that has also experienced a heart condition, that is terrifying. So on behalf of all of the people that we work with on our podcast, we hope that he's okay. He's had
multiple surgeries, right, or procedures done on his heart. So this isn't anything new, but
Does not change our feelings on it.
A couple of instances, though, he didn't miss a ton of time. I think just a couple of brief IL stints. So hopefully this would be the worst case scenario in regards to that. But bullpen spots are so critical. I'd be really surprised if they don't just proactively move him to the IL to get someone up from Worcester.
So a little more context here. According to, who was this? Mass Live Sports, his heart issues have flared up in altitude, so they're precautionarily keeping him out. because they are not going to IL him, even though there's a medical reason. MLB rules dictate the Red Sox can't replace him on the roster, so they'll play a man short for 3 days.
Wow.
So it looks like there's maybe no issue. They're just being careful with the player because of his history, which I have respect for.
100% agree.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did the Pittsburgh Steelers did this with a safety, Clark, for two or three years. They played out there, and he just didn't play in that game, even though he was healthy and a really good player. He just didn't play. So
I actually do remember something about that. I don't remember what it was, but I do remember him missing some time. I actually went to this game, and I am eating crow because I said that Pivetta was not going to be doing that great, or I didn't expect him to do that well. I did pick the Dodgers to win that game, but not because of, you know, the team doing great or that grand slam. I thought that Pivetta was not gonna, you know, absolutely lock it down. And he did really, really well. Six innings, allowed 2 hits, 8 strikeouts. I mean, he was absolutely on it. It was a shame that yet again, you know, second time in the month of July, Pivetta has not allowed a run in 6 or more innings and has not registered a decision. It's disappointing and baffling, really. You know, early this year, 5 innings against Oakland, did not, excuse me, I misspoke. He did register a decision there, got the win. But the first season, first game of the season, he allowed 1 earned run and took the loss there. So there have been a couple games where we just have not been able to, you know, give him the run support. You know, it's like the antithesis of what we're doing for, you know, Bayo or what the Dodgers are doing for Paxton. So I, you know, credit Pivetta. He did great. Anything else that you guys want to add for Pivetta? Cool. My set for this one is going to be fun. So for Johnny Fontaine, I know you got 2 cents. And if you want to at me, I will at you right the hell back, buddy. Tyler O'Neill, Pro Neil, had a heck of a series, literally did everything possible to will the Red Sox to victory. We still could not get it done. 5 for 13, 3 singles, 2 dingers, 4 RBIs, 5 strikeouts. But again, you're hitting home runs. I can't comment. Drew a walk as well. The first game, though, I'm going to be honest, those singles, 2 of those singles were suspect. I thought one of them was going to be an error, but he was hustling. And I'm going to say this much. The reason why I'm still calling him a stud as opposed to, you know, a questionable dud here was because of that 2-run performance. In the first game, he got thrown out running back to first base from Miguel Vargas, who was playing in left field. I mean, I'm watching this. I'm like, uh-oh. He doesn't really look like he's hustling. And Vargas, who moments before had collided with the center fielder, Andy Páez, and they dropped the ball and they did not call it an error. And, you know, he's standing at, you know, he's just there. And Vargas later on ends up catching the ball left field, kind of takes a peek and notices that he's not really kind of taking it that serious, like a serious run back. And Vargas throws an absolute missile back to first and throws it, doubles him off. They get him into a double play, which was embarrassing. So I was just waiting for, you know, the Johnny Fontaines to come out of nowhere and talk their business and be heard. But I mean, 2 for 4, you can't really complain when someone has 2 home runs in a game. I mean, he did everything possible to try to will us to winning the game. Terry, why don't you go first, and then Jeremy, we'll have you wrap it up.
I mean, that's just been the Tyler O'Neill journey for us. You know, his overall numbers on the season, this will be his second best season of his career, which is far better than what I expected it would be. He didn't end the series on a good note, 0 for 4, 3 strikeouts, still struck out twice in game 2 despite the 2 homers. Is what it is. You can't, I mean, he's still going to be a critical part of who we are going forward. And, following the 2 runs, there was a lot of interesting back and forth in our war room, Jason mentioned he would extend him for multiple years, which I'm not a big fan of. I think you got more than you expected in year one, and you look at all the dead money you have, Trevor Story, Masataka Yoshida, and who's to say?
Sale.
Yeah, Sale, absolutely. Who's to say O'Neill only plays 60 games next year because of chronic injuries, and or even if it's 80 or 90, and they're not quality games because of that? It's just not a risk I would take, really. So I think one or two other hosts in there were somewhat open to it. There were at least two or three who were not. But it was a good series, and you know, it's easy to get fired up when he crushes one, because none of his home runs are cheap, and he is a bona fide power guy when he's locked in.
So I am not one of the guys that would extend him. He's not consistent enough, guys. He's either lightning in a bottle or he's just swinging and missing like he's a fan. The play at first, he was running on the play. So it wasn't like he was like just out on an island, like lost focus, like didn't know how many outs there were. He just didn't hustle back. And it's inexcusable. The play itself is inexcusable. But I don't have concerns with O'Neill not playing hard. And so I think it was more of a one-off than something to be concerned about in the greater scheme of things. But this series, in the three games, were the roller coaster that is O'Neill. So he's 3-for-4. Then he's 2-for-5 with 4 RBIs and 2 home runs. But then he reverts back to the 0-for-4 with 3 Ks. He does draw a walk, but like he didn't put the ball in play. You know, I will say one thing. The home run he hit in extras on Saturday, it's the type of thing where typically when you're leading off in an extra innings, you want to hit the ball on the ground to the right side to advance the runner. And he goes out and puts that level, that quality of the swing on the ball and hits the ball out of the ballpark and gives you every chance to win a game. Because 2 runs in extra innings, you should win the game. As an aside, I think they had two run leads in that game late, meaning 7th inning or beyond, and they didn't win the game, which is just an epic failure of the bullpen, which we talked about. But, I mean, look, he'll go out and win you a game. And he should have won us the game on Saturday. And I like him on a 1-year deal. I do not like him on anything else, not even 2, because I am like Terry. He's a huge candidate to play 60 games next year, and then the following year hit 25 home runs, and then the following year play 60 games. And that's not the type of consistency you're looking for when you're going to give a guy a multiple-year contract, especially from a team that isn't going to pay. So if they choose to pay this player, that means they're choosing not to pay somebody else, and I'm not okay with that. The answer in that spot is probably outside the organization, and they're going to have to make a decision to find, identify, and go get the player in the offseason. They should have done it with Teoscar Hernandez, by the way. Then we wouldn't even be talking about this.
Yeah, we blew that one.
And real,
Terry, go ahead.
Blew it.
Yeah,
absolute
real
failure.
If before Charlie weighs back in, he was interviewed by Rob Bradford. And apparently the offer the Red Sox did issue him was a 2-year, $28 million deal. Now, that's the same annual money that Lourdes Gurriel got from the Diamondbacks, but Gurriel got an extra year. He got a third year for $42 million. That exact deal would have gotten it done, according to Hernandez. He probably would have taken that deal. But instead, nothing else really materialized outside of what the Red Sox offered him, 2-for-28, and then what he eventually did sign with the Dodgers, 1-year, $23 million. So, of course, he's going to take the 1-year, $23 and just go back to free agency next year, hopefully after a really robust year, and that's what he's done. So to have that bat in the lineup this year would have been amazing. The strikeouts might have been annoying, but he would have been far more consistent than O'Neill, and you would have had him for two more years. Your outfield would have been set had you signed Teoscar.
Yep. Jeremy, go ahead.
Yeah, if you haven't listened to that, go back and listen to it. There's another part of it that I found fascinating and would reach the level of a failure by Breslow. So, number one, you normally don't get answers like this from players that are still active. And I found that fascinating in and of itself. But then he goes to say that Bradford asks him, well, did you guys ever discuss a third year? And his answer was, yes, we did. And the Red Sox said they'd get back to me on it. But they took too long, so I decided to take the deal here. So you potentially lost the player because you took too long. Are you bleeping kidding me?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Terry.
Well, I was going to say, I can add some context to that. There was a John Heyman tweet at some point in January. I'm fairly certain it was Heyman. I'm not 100% sure, though, where he came out and said he's hearing that there's at least one free agent that has been told by the Red Sox they're very interested in him, but they need to try to offload some money before they sign him. So after that interview, he was the guy, and I was assuming it was a Montgomery type guy. I thought that was a starting pitcher type guy when the Heyman tweet came out. So it, by the sounds of it, they were really trying to get Teoscar, and what they were likely trying to do was offload the Kenley deal to make that happen, and they couldn't do it. So as Jeremy is saying, it was an absolute failure to execute on the part of Breslow.
That makes it worse.
It is worse.
That makes it worse. Go sign the player. I censored myself there. I want credit for it. And then deal with the salary or whatever BS organizational cap is in place. You're not in violation of any penalties. There's no reason to go get the guy you want and then go move the guy you don't. It makes absolutely no sense that you have to move Kenley first or whoever the player is. Go get the player, make the move later. The NFL does it all the time. Every other league does it all the time. Every other baseball team would have done it that way. That is pathetic. It is absolutely pathetic that he's not on this roster, if that's the case.
So, yeah, I'm just going to say, Jeremy, well done. Second off, I don't want you to give yourself a heart. No, it's okay. There are children that live in your household. I'm assuming they're all asleep. But you're absolutely right. It does make it look worse. The optics of it are awful. When you hear that again, that's terrible. That's like, yeah, we want you, but we don't want you bad enough that we're gonna have to, you know, have more money on the books yet. We're not really trying in 2024. And that's really unfortunate because, again, Terry, like you already said it, like, look what could have happened. We wouldn't be talking about Tyler O'Neill. Granted, Tyler O'Neill's done great this year, so credit to him for doing what he's done. But I mean, this has been a bit of a disaster. Like that's an unfortunate story to come out. I almost wish I didn't know that, because the fact that we didn't come back to Teo is embarrassing. It really is embarrassing. How do you take yourself seriously? And how do you take the franchise seriously when you are not out there trying to get power right-handed bats? It's just, it's embarrassing. That's it. Terry, go ahead.
I'll just point out and wrap it with this. Had you made that acquisition, you already had O'Neill. So, because he was acquired so early in the year. Had you made that acquisition, your lineup is far better balanced, righty versus lefty. That would have put Seydon Rafaela almost certainly into the infield at the start of the year, if not at the very beginning, certainly when Story got hurt, which was like on April 10th. So basically at the beginning, you wouldn't have lost all those games on defense earlier on. Like just the presence of Hernandez in that lineup would have solved so many issues directly and indirectly. And you talk about clubhouse presence. He's one of the most well-liked, well-respected guys in Major League Baseball. He would have fit in perfectly.
Perfectly, exactly. And Terry, I know you say you like to be corrected. Trevor Story didn't even last 8 games. It was actually April 5th, which makes it even more sad.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, it was against the Angels. I remember that. That was the day that, you know, we were up, I believe, 4-0, and then we had a little bit of a heftier lead, and then their catcher hit a grand slam. It was that game. Oh, Hoppy hit a grand slam. Won't forget it. Was out of the bar watching that. So let me see. I think that's all three of our studs now. A couple honorable mentions. Connor Wong, I know he went 2 for 8. He struck out 4 times. He drew 3 walks, which is something that not a lot of guys are able to do. And it's nice when it happens consistently. And when it happens all in one game, it's even better. He drew 3 walks all in the last game of that series. And he stole the base, too. So credit to Wong. Bayo, Jeremy, on the honorable mentions list, 6 innings again, 3 runs on 5 hits, struck out 7. So he's there. And then Boozer, pair of strikeouts, an inning of work. And I'm sure there are going to be a couple others that you guys would like to chat about. Terry, was there anybody else that you wanted to mention for studs, honorable mentions?
Really, the only one worth noting for me is Sadon Raffaello was 5 for 11, had a hit in every game, drove in a run today in the finale, but continues to have somewhat of a consistent season there in terms of hits. And he did draw 1 walk, actually, so.
Which is nice and rare. Yeah, go ahead, Jeremy, sorry.
Three guys that I think could have a little bit uptick in importance of innings. Boozer threw a scoreless inning, as did Horn and Winkowski. Another guy who threw a scoreless inning, but I don't necessarily need to see him, is Anderson. So it wasn't all bad in the bullpen.
Agreed. Anything else that you gents would like to add?
Nope.
Perfect. That is going to wrap it for the Bastards here. Everyone have a great one. Take care.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.